I'm a fool, but I'll love you, dear, until the day I die. Now and then, there's a fool such as I.
Everybody, welcome to Hate House, episode 37. I am your host, Larry Ridgway, and Johnny's not back yet. He's still doing the plumbing thing. But I'm joined again by J.O. De La Rey. How are you, J.O.?
I'm doing excellent. Glad to be back. Let's hate niggers.
Good stuff. And we are joined this week by a special guest, a returning guest, host of the Crypto Report, writer for the Daily Stormer, Asmodor. How are you?
Well, I'm mad at these blacks and Jews.
Well,
what are you talking about?
I know that feel.
I'm annoyed. I'm somewhat annoyed with them.
Well, speaking of blacks and Jews, we have a real quick thing. Today is the white nigger slave auction for the National Football League.
Is this where they dress up real nice and? The various masses who are almost all fucking Jews bid on them.
Well, it's all like Jew commentators. They're like, this nigga here, he can run a 4.5 in the 40-yard dash. I mean, it is basically like a slave auction that these niggers just get paid millions and millions of dollars
for. Well, you know why that arbitrary number was chosen and how the niggers do it so fast is they told them there is a 40 at the other end.
Oh! Makes sense.
So they just fucking take off, dude.
Yeah, the draft combine took off after Billy D. Williams. He was the inspiration behind how we can measure how exceptional these niggers really are.
Oh, so they've got the 40, and then you just mentioned the combine, which is a piece of farm equipment.
Yeah, no,
they don't want to be the farm equipment. So this whole thing is a psychological play on these niggers.
Yeah,
they should do these things more like slave auctions, like for the good of the team, because like they should get them all up there lined up, or maybe have them one at a time, whatever. But have them in a loincloth like they did back when they were selling them to pick cotton and such. And they could, tell him, turn around there, Rastus. And when he turns around, somebody could take like a pointer and poke him in the buttocks and say, see, look how big, how taut. He will really run. That's explosive energy right there.
Yeah. You know? And it's just like, and people ask all the time, they're like, well, why are niggers so predominant in sports like basketball and football? And it's like, well, because you need speed to do these things. And over time, all the slow niggers were eaten by lions and stuff on the plains in Africa.
Yeah. Well, you know,
let's import a bunch of lions.
Dude, I wish.
a horse will outrun a white man in a foot race, but it doesn't make the horse human.
A horse will also outspell a nigger in a spelling bee, too.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I've seen chickens at the county fair that can do math better than a nigger, but I don't know what these things mean exactly. But, and there was some Jew. There's some Jew quarterback who is kvetching.
Joshua Rosen.
They won't draft him because he's a Jew.
I read a this was funny. I got family members that are real into sports ball. Like, played sports ball. Hell, I played sports ball in high school. There was a what the hell is it? Yet Sports Magazine, Sports Illustrated was sent here to my residence, and a fucking one of these that very Jew, Joshua Rosen, was in there talking about how proud he was of his Jewish heritage and shit. And it's like this is what modern day sports are. It's all about identity and shit.
I don't know, fucking, there have actually been a couple Jewish football players. I don't understand. If there's any truth to the idea that they won't let this guy play because he's Jewish. It's because his mother called all the Jewish owners and was like, oh, God, don't let anything happen to my baby.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
Like, this whole fucking league is owned and run by Jews.
Well, it was great.
There's like fucking 32 teams and like 24 of them have Jewish owners. The commissioner's a Jew. Half the refs are Jews.
It's
what do you mean?
It's absolutely remarkable how overrepresented these people are in elite in positions of power. It's just, it blows my fucking mind, man. How could this be?
Yeah, I can see why his mother would be worried about that, because I would imagine that 20 or 30 concussions a year would just wreck that high verbal IQ.
Yeah, have him speaking like Mike Tyson, some dumb illiterate nigger with a fucking list. But no, like,
that asshole's out there running around with the fucking kippa on his helmet.
Yeah, dude, I peeked in and I saw it was like apparently he's pretty pissed off that he was drafted like late. Saw a picture of him here on he's waiting to be drafted. Apparently he was drafted by the Arizona Cardinals. And he's looking super pissed off because he got taken as late as he did. It's like, you unappreciative kike bastard.
Yeah, you entitled motherfucker.
You're getting picked to play, to get paid millions of dollars to play a fucking game, and you look surly sitting in a chair dressed in a fucking tux. Yeah, but this is you're right, Joe. This is the event where one of the events that niggers get dressed up. This coupled with every single NBA game that you see, those big, tall, stupid niggers walking into the games wearing pants that are like six sizes too small for them, that are hiked up to their knees and stuff with bow ties and shit.
Right.
Yeah. It's like, hey, this is every day is dressed like Outcast Day.
They like to get their big snood outfit on, like, and you can almost kind of understand it, because none of these niggers have ever had any money before, right? So then they just want to go out and buy a $5,000 suit and et cetera, et cetera. And
the average
career in the NFL is, what, like 3.5 years or something? These guys will make $10 million, and they're bankrupt within 5 years and not playing anymore.
Yeah, Marcus Vick, dude. How many times have we talked about him on shows that I've been on? Marcus Vick, brother of Michael Vick. Talented, exceptional nigga to play football. Ooga booga, though. You know, he really fucking ooga booga'd out. And
can you imagine? Got arrested, dude. Kind of shot?
Gets arrested multiple fucking times, dude, for like outrageous shit. You know, drug possession. I think he got arrested with an unregistered firearm before. Like, there was a video of him on fucking Facebook running from the police.
And then didn't he, like, stomp a woman out?
Well, no, he may have. I mean, probably. Niggers do that all the time. But I know that he stomped on people on the football field, which was hilarious. Yeah, was just that. some surly nigger stomping on other niggers on the field. It's like...
that should be okay.
No, it should be. People were super mad about it, though. They were like... And the guy that he stomped out, get this is funny... I used to watch sports ball all the time. I used to love that shit.
Me too.
Haven't watched it in like 2 years. But the nigger that he stomped on in college, his name was Elvis. Elvis Doomerville. Stomped on by brother of the dog fighting nigger, Michael Vick. But no, he's a piece of shit. Typical stuff. But I think that, you know, we don't have to talk too much about these niggers that are about to get paid more in 1 year than probably all three of us will make combined in our entire lives.
Really. Well, I keep buying the Powerball tickets, so I have hopes, you know.
Yeah. Well, shit, nigga. You win you win in the Powerball. That's about as lucky as I got to get, you know, to catch footballs on my way out to hood, nigga. Well, keep me ever, out to pen.
Have you ever looked at the results of what happens when a nigger wins the lottery?
Well, I watched a show, funny you say that, because there was a nigger that won the lottery. I was watching Lock Up the other day, which is basically just a show about niggers in prison. And this one white woman murdered this nigger and fucking stashed him away in her backyard, and he was a lottery winner, and she like took his money and shit. And now she's in jail for the rest of her life. No, so yeah, they die.
They always start doing drugs, or like they want to sell drugs just for the street cred. Like, what the fuck do you need this for? You have $30 million, but you've decided to start selling heroin.
Well, my nigga Freeway Ricky Ross, he turned you know, $15 into $500 million.
Yeah, I can flip this.
Yeah. The CIA set him up. they invented that crack for him to sell.
Well, but, you know, and the police are out there looking for us because, as Tariq Nasheed said, my nigga, blacks are the only people we can destroy the world sexually. So the police want to keep us locked up in the pen, my nigga.
In other words, this guy just admitted that all niggers are rapists.
Yeah, they just we can destroy the world with my dick. Like,
well, when you hear something like that, like when some black actually says we can destroy the world sexually, and there's not like thousands of white people in the comments section or whatever from that saying, okay, it's time to get rid of these blacks. It makes me wonder, like, maybe do we deserve it?
It's almost like these niggers know. They're like, yeah, look, we understand. Like, there are things such as genes, right? And if by polluting the genes of the better races, we can destroy the world. We can literally destroy the world because there will be nobody around to produce anything. So niggers are fully aware of how shitty they truly are.
But also, Tariq Nasheed wouldn't know a white person if it ran up and bit him on the ass. Like, yesterday he was talking about...
Don't you mean suspected white supremacist, Joe?
Yeah, like, he called Ben Shapiro a white supremacist, which I could... Like, I'm not out here to defend Ben Shapiro, but in like, the election time in 2015, 2016, what Jew did we shit on harder than little Benny Shapiro, right?
Well, you could hardly say
but then
that
he's out there saying, oh, Bill Cosby got convicted, but Harvey Weinstein won't because he's white.
and some nigger corrected him then and was like,
yeah,
not white, he's a Jew. He's not going to get in trouble because he's a Jew. Nothing will happen to Woody Allen, Harvey Weinstein, or
Roman Polanski.
Yeah, some like woke nigger. And then I saw somebody saying in one of the groups I'm in, they were like, you know, I'm almost ready to give a pass to woke blacks. And it's like, nope, still niggers. And
well, they are super entertaining, right? Like, niggers who understand Jews, like, I'll bullshit with them. I'll chit-chat with them. Like, I would sit around with some Nation of Islam guys who are like, hey, you're an actual demon. I'm like, hey, you're a fucking monkey. And talk about Jews with them, right? Like, I think it's funny when niggers know about Jews.
Only say shit like that from the computer.
You never get in my face and say that, motherfucker.
Yeah, that's right.
I get my dick out.
Smell like wet dog.
Yeah, nigga. You eat, yo, white cracker niggas, you eat food but no spices on them. Y'all niggas don't even know how to enjoy yourself.
There for a while, every time you'd piss off a nigger on Twitter, they would come right back with mayonnaise crack-ass motherfucker. Something about mayonnaise. They thought they'd really gotten you.
Guess what, nigger? I fucking love mayonnaise, whatever. Like, you're not hurting my feelings right now.
And it's nigger, you probably like mustard or something, you gross fucking piece of shit. Like.
Well, you know that it's a Jew meme that we eat mayonnaise and they eat mustard.
Yeah. No, I didn't even know that was a meme to begin with.
No, it is. Like, Jewish comedians will talk about it, and Jews in private. I used to work around a bunch of Jews in a restaurant, and Jews always talk about fucking white people and their mayonnaise.
Well, you know, and that just really makes me mad that they can talk about us and our mayonnaise and shit. I don't even fucking like mayonnaise. But these nose niggers can talk about us and our mayonnaise, but we can't talk about them and all their, you know, media control and money and usury and other negative shit that goes on in the world today. Man, I heard that fucking Meraki tune on the Merchant Minute the other day. It was awesome. Usury is wrong. It makes me want to fill my ovens up with juice.
Let's jump back a second here to Tariq Nasheed talking about Bill Cosby. Do we want to talk about the rapist in chief for a minute?
Yeah, no, yeah, dude. Literally convicted it of my dick.
As had a hot take on this before we came in that, like, this has to be something this nigger was just into.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it has to be because, you know, he'd been a celebrity since the 60s. I think I Spy was the name of the TV show he was on. He was like the first big celebrity nigger. And he could have sex all the time with whatever kind of woman he wanted. You know, during the 70s, every other week, they'd have pictures of him in Playboy at the Playboy Mansion sitting around with a bunch of half-naked white bitches and all this stuff. And yet he felt some urge to, like, drug these women and screw them while they're passed out. And, I mean, anybody who's ever had, like, an alcoholic girlfriend can tell you that screwing them he's passed out is maybe a tiny step above masturbation. So it was some kind of weird control fetish he had to do this, or well, like some rape fantasy he had.
Well, yeah, and listening to what you're saying here now, it makes me think, like, niggers, even like the niggers that are put forth as exceptional niggers, like family values niggers. Oh, I'm a doctor. I'm a doctor. Check me out. I have a family. I didn't abandon my children type of nigger. Even those niggers still think that consensual sex is unnatural and they have to rape. Yeah. Like, that is just the natural way of getting sex for niggers. It's just, it's
and he wasn't just a doctor on that show, though. He was a gynecologist.
Oh, was he?
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Delivered babies.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Me and my niggas looking at pussy all day.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Let Dr. Huxtable get the speculum out, bitch.
Well, it's hilarious. I've talked several times about a lot of these African languages that do not have separate words for sex and rape. And this like goes to prove it. This is supposed to be one of your high functioning niggers. Let's remember, he went and got himself in a bunch of trouble over the last 10, 20 years for criticizing blacks. And like when hip hop became a thing, like he would express his disappointment in blacks. But
so you don't think
niggers must rape even when consensual sex is an option?
Yeah. Everywhere I go, I must rape.
Yeah.
Well, James, so hold on.
I also
you're not saying
shit on the fucking narrative that like,
you got
he
me.
Got hemmed up, because I've seen guys on our side talking about like, oh, the reason Cosby got jobbed and not everyone else is because he spoke out against niggers. So now this discredits all of his criticism of hip hop and niggerdom and swearing and having your pants half off your ass. And like, he had legitimate criticisms of blacks and he went hard on them.
But
he's still a fucking rapist.
No, and that's it, dude. Yeah, okay, so this nigger had great criticism on niggers. Do you know why? Because he's a nigger, and he understands that, like, this is what they do. He's like, oh, check me out, ooga booga. I'm fucking, you know, I'm Dr. Huxtable. I'm Bill Cosby. I'm fucking fantastic. And still, I'm out here raping bitches. So I can, you know, it's easy for me to talk about, like, oh, all this music and stuff is what did it.
Well, and he was unusually savvy for a black, and he knew way back. He learned this probably when he was doing his comedy tours, because, like, even if you listen to the old stuff from the early 60s, his comedy records, it was very tame, you know, you could tell that the audience was not blacks, because, like, you listen to an old Red Fox record, you can tell that audience is full of niggers, you know, and he's making your typical nigger jokes where everything's about sex and all that. And he was funny. I'm not saying he wasn't, but Cosby, you know, it was always about most of his comedy act was about the characters who would later become the Cosby kids on his Fat Albert cartoon, and you know, it was all very clean stuff. And he figured out early on that the way to huge success and giant money was to get a white audience. And whether or not he actually felt the way that he did about rap and all that, that was a genius move. And, you know, everybody was always like, oh, you know, the blacks, they hate him now and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, name
and
one nigger in history who's more beloved by white people than Bill Cosby. Right. Between his willingness to criticize blacks, between his, you know, he's got his nice TV show with his nice black family. And before that, he had this stand-up career. And the shit is legitimately funny.
Well, I got one clean, for you.
And it's not niggerish. Like, this guy totally ingratiated himself into white society and still had to rape white women.
I know. Yeah. I know. There are other niggers though that are as beloved to whites as Bill Cosby, unfortunately, and one of them is Martin Luther King.
Not the boomers, like, you know, young people love rappers and shit, but for
I mean like Martin Luther King, dude. White people fucking love him.
Yeah. If Bill Cosby had been shot in the head in 1989, he'd probably be on the fucking. Well, they'd have statues to him, too.
I think before the rape thing, boomers, especially like conservative boomers, I think they loved Cosby more than Martin Luther King. And, you know,
because they know they're bullshitting when they talk about MLK, but they legitimately liked Cosby.
They didn't like MLK because he came and disrupted the, you know, society, the balance in society that our boomer parents, their parents enjoyed. And they just, they say they like him as a means to signal, but they really don't. Yeah, you guys are right there.
Yeah, but like that Cosby show was, you know, it completely affirmed all this boomer crap, whether they were liberals or conservatives. And if you were around when you could have watched that show, which I rarely did, but, you know, it was the biggest thing on, literally the biggest thing on television forever. So I saw plenty of episodes of it. And it was very finely crafted to where it was not going to offend conservatives. It was not going to offend liberals. And it affirmed the bullshit from both sides. It affirmed to conservatives that why with good family values and hard work and all that, these blacks can be just like us, if not better. And, you know, to the liberals, it was the opposite. Well, you know, here's a world without discrimination here on the Cosby Show, and see how everyone gets along and how glorious these niggers are. And that's what the whole thing was. It was just propaganda.
Yeah, it was propaganda, and it was more of this, and I railed on this 1,000 times, and I'll rail on it 1,000 more. The insidious nature of it, right, because the Cosby Show was produced by Jews, is niggers can be good people too, and we'll show you the good niggers. And maybe you know a good nigger, but your decent naxalts only serve to get you to put your guard down so that 10,000 shitbird niggers can show up in your neighborhood. Like, the Huxtables aren't going to fuck your neighborhood up, but they are going to make everyone comfortable with the next family of niggers when DMX moves in.
Well, unfortunately, I'm echoing, sorry. They actually will fuck up your neighborhood, maybe not the ones who live in that house, but, you know, I've had this experience several times. And like, we've got in this subdivision I live in, it's a white subdivision, and right outside the gate here, some niggers moved in and built a house, and like, they're both lawyers, you know, they lawyer niggas, they work for a big oil company down in Houston. I won't name it so as not to dox these poor innocents.
But these niggers, dude, innocent niggers.
Yeah. As the door protects niggers.
Innocent niggers. There were never two antonyms were never used.
Like I said, they're lawyers, so I'm actually protecting myself. But the thing is,
oil money.
The people are right. The old man and the old woman, they are nice people. Like, that just them, you wouldn't worry about, well, I need a glass of water. Can I leave the lawnmower in the front yard? But all their relatives come over, and you know, they got cousins who's crackheads and stuff
His cousin Pookie is going to steal your bike, Asmodor.
They nasty.
I'm warning you right now.
They nasty niggas. He's
going to take your bicycle.
Yeah. And it's amazing how the addition of just one nigger into a neighborhood can totally change things. Like, I remember when we moved here, and I don't know if I've said this on the show before, but like when we first moved here, I got all the old deed restrictions and stuff. And like when this subdivision was founded, which was in the late 70s, even then it said in the deed restrictions that only members of the Caucasian race of white humans is allowed to own property, live in or reside in, and it named this subdivision. But and there weren't any here forever. And like about 10 years ago, this mud shark bitch rented a house over in this other section of the subdivision, and she had brought her black boyfriend in here. And like within a week, all of a sudden one day I hear this loud kablam, and I go running out there, and this nigger that she'd brought in here with her was probably drunk, and he's driving this little Kia, and he was driving it so fast through the neighborhood that he lost control and drove through my fence and up into the yard and like took out 20 feet of my fence. And he immediately, of course, reacted like a nigger. And instead of getting out and saying, hey, I'm sorry, let's work this out or whatever, he puts it in reverse and hauls ass out of the subdivision. And then later on tried to sneak the car back in, and I caught him. He had the car hidden in the backyard, spraying it with red spray paint, trying to cover up evidence. But, you know,
it's like, you big dummy nigger, I saw you do that. Like,
but it's like, well, but anyway, the moral of the story is you can live in a place for 20 years and everything be fine, and you introduce a nigger into the mix, and in under a week, random stupid nigger shit will happen and cost you big chunks of your property.
Well, Asmodor,
that's if you're lucky. That's all that happens.
Well,
the neighborhood I grew up in West Detroit, in the era I grew up, is the perfect microcosm of all of this. When I started kindergarten, the high school in my neighborhood was pretty much all white, and a couple of niggers moved in, and then the whole wave came over, and now the high school in the neighborhood I grew up in is 90% black.
Yeah, I had the same experience with the neighborhood that I lived in from the time I was about five until the summer after fourth grade. And it was a nice neighborhood. And one day, some blacks moved into a house right up the street. And my dad was one of the people who's like, okay, we're putting the house up for sale now. And so he got his value out of the house, and we moved further away to get away from the blacks. And
did you sell the niggers?
No, I don't think so. I think he just handed it over to a real estate agent to sell it, but I doubt it was sold to niggers. But over the next couple of years, it was exactly what he said would happen. Happened that, you know, once one bunch of them moved in, the property value started going down. And when the property value started going down, more of them started moving in. And you go driving through there now, and it's just a slum. And it's sad, because those were all nice, like, three-bedroom, two-bath houses that young families would be, and that's what it was for us, you know, young family, the first house they owned and all that.
Dude, the house I grew up in sold a couple of years ago for less than $30,000 fucking dollars.
Yeah.
What my parents paid more for it when they bought it in the early 80s than it sold for a couple of years ago.
Right. Well, and that's what happens, and it'll happen overnight. You know, and that's the thing that I go on and on about, is the huge amounts of lost wealth that we have because of, you know, integration, of having to let these people buy the houses, is because, you know, we'll build cities, and like down here, you know, the cities were segregated, and once the segregation is forcefully ended, they start moving into your neighborhood. And so you pack up and move away. And in the case of something like Dallas, when they, in the 70s, the city of Dallas was a white city, and they started the forced school busing. And when they did that first, you know, the Wyatts panicked and bunches of them started selling their houses. And like over a summer between school terms, whole neighborhoods, the Wyatts had completely fled and they'd been taken over by blacks. And now you've got a situation where it's like 82% non-white in Dallas.
Dude, and I was in Houston last week.
Yeah.
I spent last week in Texas. I was in Houston and Austin going to see our people. And, dude, Houston, fucking, you don't even know who you're looking at half the time. It's like, okay, there's some niggers, there's some Mexicans. What the fuck is that? Is that a Pajit or a Pakistani or some kind of weird Indio? It's fucking everywhere, man.
Yeah, now, Houston has always been a nigger town. At least my whole life it has. I mean, that part of Texas has just got so many niggers. And but it has changed into the multicultural thing. And that's another thing that's happened here where I live. I live about 350 miles north of Houston, but it's in East Texas. And when I was a kid growing up, it was like 70-something% white and everything else was black. And I moved away for a while. I lived up in Dallas for about 10 years and I moved back here. And I took somebody to the shopping center in South Tyler, which has always been the white part of Tyler. And I didn't want to go into the store. She was going in to shop for women's clothes and shit. So I was going to sit out in the car and listen to the radio or whatever. And I'm sitting out there and I'm looking around and like there's a group of Mexican females here pushing around at half a dozen strollers apiece. And there's all these fucking weird people wearing turbans and burkas and all this other shit running around. I'm like, what the fuck happened in just 10 years? They took and like I don't like niggers. I wish that they would all go back to Africa or whatever. But at least when we had a population where it was white people and black people, you had this real clear delineation between the two groups, and it wasn't nearly as alien a thing. Whenever the blacks would come around, you're like, well, yeah, okay, so they're niggers, right? And you knew how to deal with that,
right?
But all of a sudden, you're like this one white guy, and you're surrounded by Africans and Asians and Arabs and Pajits and blacks. It's a whole different thing. It's like you're in Blade Runner or something.
Yeah. Well, you guys said about the property cross, the fucking, I'm so goddamn stupid. I can't talk, but the goddamn, the motherfucking cost of property dropping, the property cost going down.
Property value.
God damn it, dude. Yeah. The property value. So the value of the property dropping down. Well, to niggers, that just, hey man, that sounds like some opportunities for me. I'm about to go in there and get a little bit of that white people success. You know, that magic dirt them crack of mayonnaise motherfuckers be living on.
Well, yeah, it absolutely is. And
then everything bombs out and they wonder why, right? When we leave and it bombs property value, we're evil.
Well, dude, and it's like
when
that. It's like
back, it's gentrification and the property value goes up and we're evil for that. And let me ask a backup question about gentrification. Okay, I'm from Detroit. We, our city has always been a fucking shithole as long as I've been alive. But we have these neighborhoods now. There are actually a couple neighborhoods in Detroit that are becoming nice again. And there's all the gentrification complaints. Property values are getting too high for niggers to live there anymore. What? And the idea is that these are our neighborhoods and we should be able to afford to live there. Well, before you bomb that neighborhood out, it was a white neighborhood.
And it's like this. Yeah. It's like, oh, the property values are getting too fucking high here. I know a place that the property values are very low. It's in the fucking Sudan. Why don't you go back there, nigger?
Well, you know, and it's not just the blacks doing this now either. There are some neighborhoods in Southern California, like in the Los Angeles area and stuff, where a few months back they were having this big uproar because like these were historically some of them Jewish neighborhoods and this and that. But they, you know, for the longest they had been invaded by illegal aliens. And so they were practically illegal alien neighborhoods. And all of these white people weren't even moving in there like to live. They were moving in there and buying up the old businesses and putting in like these upscale coffee houses and stuff like that. And the illegal aliens are screaming about gentrification, talking about this is our neighborhood. I'm like, motherfucker, this isn't even your country.
Yeah, it's like you people are here because of Jews. Like, you're not even here because we want you here. Or yeah. Like, you're here because Jews have convinced enough people like us to allow you to be here. You're not going to come here and turn fucking Texas. I mean, they basically already kind of have turned Texas into, you know, a fucking Mexico. huge taco stand, dude. Pretty much. But, you know, with various white people scattered around the big bean burrito that is Texas now, as sad as it sounds.
Yeah. Well, we're still the biggest racial group here. We're just not the majority. We're like 42%, and all other groups are like, all of the other major groups are like 41%, and then there's like this whatever percent that's left over that's mixed race people. And
I got a friend who lives in Chinatown in Houston.
Yeah.
Like, why does Houston have Chinatown? Like, when we think Texas, we think cowboys with pistol on their hips and shit. No,
yeah,
we got Chinese motherfuckers running around.
No. Well, dude, Texas has basically become like the landfill for refuse from fucking California.
Yeah. And they can be, the white ones, they can be just as problematic as the minorities in a lot of ways.
More like, problematic. They have more agency.
Oh, yeah. When I was in Austin, that's like, you know, it's fucking white shit lib capital. And it's hilarious because it's all these people escaping California and the Pacific Northwest because they have voted themselves into an unaffordable community.
Yeah.
So they go to Austin and then keep voting for the same shit that ran them out.
Yeah. Well, like they come here where I live. I live on Lake Palestine is how we pronounce it. Of course, Lake Palestine. But they come Inshallah. Here and that, like, they retire to come. They want to retire away from all the crap they lived in Southern California or whatever. And they move here to live in a little fishing community. And they allegedly are moving here because they like the way things are done here better. That's what they'll tell you. And then the first thing you see, and this was a lot of what I was fighting when I first started doing local government activism, was that these people from California will go and get themselves appointed to positions in city council and run for seats on city council and stuff. And immediately the first time they have a city council meeting, they start saying, well, look, the way we did this in California was, and they start advocating to do everything that way.
And doesn't it just make you sad, Asmodor, that, like, there aren't white people there to be like, yeah, dude, but California is a fucking brown shithole. Like, why would I want, what makes you think that we want Texas to be that?
Well, we don't. And when I was a kid, my favorite bumper sticker, back when, like, we first started being big in the tech sector and stuff, which we were for a long time. I don't know, compared to
Silicon Prairie.
Silicon Valley, we're not anything now. But you know, back in the early 80s and all, we were huge with Texas Instruments and all that. And we had all these people moving from California to here. And the most popular bumper sticker going around that was my favorite simply said, "Welcome to Texas. Now go home." And nobody wanted them here.
Californians. Yeah.
There is a YouTube video, and it's probably 5 years old now, of a guy at an Austin city council meeting. And he goes up there, and dude, it's like meme tier, right? This guy goes up and says, listen, I have voted for every millage, for every pay raise for teachers, for every subsidy for public transportation. But now it's getting to the point where I can't afford to live here. Like, what... What are you complaining about? Like, you just shot yourself in the dick.
Yeah.
And now you're crying.
And the thing is, they think that things, when they vote for this stuff, I guess they assume that it works the same way here as it did there or whatever, like where they're voting for more money from the state coffers and federal assistance and all that. But here, like, you vote to raise the teachers' pay. And you're voting to raise your fucking property taxes because that's how we pay for it here. You pay. I mean, I know that's the way it's paid for most places, but everything California does, you know, 90% of the funding comes from either from the state or from the feds in assistance because they're fucking broke. And
why could they be broke? Why could they be broke? Could it be that they have to like pay to keep these brown fucking hordes that are invading their state alive?
Yeah, well,
they're giving them welfare. The people who are working are doing it under the table and not paying taxes and not even reinjecting the money into the economy. They're sending half their paycheck home. You know, the sort of triple threat of the guy comes over, gets the under the table job. He's not paying taxes. It's a job stolen from a white person. He sends half the money back home till his wife comes up. He puts a baby in her. She drops an anchor. We get stuck with the bill for her uninsured baby to be born. But now she gets to stay, and she gets the Section 8, the welfare, all of that shit. And then because she's claiming to be a single mom because she's not going to say that she has a husband who's illegal, right? Yeah. So that the money is draining out in four directions.
Well, in a lot of states, like California has a lot of welfare benefits for actual illegal families that are claiming that their families and married and all that. I was looking at some of the statistical charts on welfare usage, and the percentage of single mothers on welfare compared to the percentage of married families on welfare has really gone lopsided over the last few years as all these Mexicans come in. Somehow they're managing to game the system, even admitting that they're married.
Jesus.
Well, I mean,
shoot me that information.
Fucking dude. Well, you know what I have to say about California getting turned into a third world cesspool? Good. Fuck them. If there were just a way to keep them out of Texas, because Texas, man, growing up, I always, like, when I think of Texas, I'm younger, I always thought of, like, a red stronghold. Like, this is a place where white people are actually still racist. And,
yeah, this is George Bush, or even before that, you know, like, this is red-blooded, we do it big. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. You know, we eat big bowls of chili here and hate niggers in Texas. And, like,
right.
We don't, yeah, and now it's like there's just fucking brown people everywhere. I was in Houston one time, and I was walking around because my dumbass didn't rent a car for the occasion that I was down there. And I'm walking around trying to find a place to eat that's close to the hotel I'm staying in. And I'm just seeing, like, spics working on roofs and roofs.
Dylan roofs?
Plural roofs. More than one roof. And niggers everywhere. And then the only white people that I saw while I was down there were just, they looked like just shitty white people. Like, roaming around Houston, walking about.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a weird dichotomy between rural and city-dwelling Texans. And it may be true everywhere, but like one time I went to prison, and you could tell a redneck rural white guy coming in there from a city white guy, especially like if they were from Dallas or Houston, immediately, because the city white guys were scared to death of blacks and the rural white guys were not. And like I guess like if you grow up in Dallas or Houston, you're so surrounded by them all the time that you get this idea that like they're just magical supermen or something, as far as you don't want to fight them or whatever. But they really are. They're scared of them. They seem to be a different, it almost seems like they're just a different race. But of course, the whole rural thing here is really degraded now too, because we're working on the second generation now, at least, of rural people for whom there are no jobs. And, farming was, as family farming and all, was over completely by the 70s, as far as that being your way of life, your profession. And ranching is just a thing that people do for a hobby, because all the ranching that's profitable is big corporate ranching. And so you've got like several generations now, especially around areas like where I live. I could I Careless Rex came down here one time, and I drove him through one of these trailer parks. Like, look at this. I said, you're going to think that this looks like what a trailer park would look like had the Nazis bombed it like they bombed London. And that's exactly what it looked like. And these are several generations of these trashy white bitches who are welfare single mothers the same way that blacks are. And it's something that we, you know, if we can ever get control of things, that we're going to really have to address, because like you've got these women that, like this one I knew, she's like 24 years old. She already has five kids by five different worthless baby daddies. All she's worried about is her next opportunity to spin a meth pipe or do an oxy. And, you know, constantly having her kids in child protective services because she won't, months on end, she won't bother to make sure they get out to the bus to go to school and shit like that. And they're just everywhere.
Well, then, Goyim, it sounds like shittiness extends across cultural lines, across
racial.
Well,
yeah, but not nearly as quickly. It's harder to get whites to be this way. It takes a lot longer.
To it for generations.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what I saw, too, was when I was down in Houston, I was going to an event way out in the cut, way out in the middle of nowhere. It was a good time. But it was the day of the Barbara Bush burial motorcade, and there were people out lining the streets. And I'm talking about, like, we had, I don't know, it was an hour and a half drive that we were along what would be, we were in front of the motorcade. It hadn't come up behind us yet, but people were out there to see it. And I saw a lot of boomers and a lot of children. All the boomers were obese, and the children actually looked very presentable, what have you. And everyone's out there in their patriotic gear. But I didn't see much in the way of Gen Z or Gen X. And you kind of got to wonder where they are, right? Because a lot of them probably, like, aren't conservatives or whatever. They're the sort of people that don't care that Barbara Bush died. And not that I do.
Neither do I. Who gives a shit?
But, like,
old bitch, young bitch, who gives a shit?
Are these people who are not present because they don't give a fuck, or like they have their own lives to tend to, or are they people who aren't present because they are what Asmodor is describing?
Well, I would think to a large degree that's probably the case. I mean, if it was on a weekend, you know, maybe a lot of these kids were just visiting the grandparents, but I would guess that lots of them are actually being raised by their grandparents. And, you know, that's the thing that goes on a lot.
Probably right.
That's the thing that goes on a lot around here, too, is, and I'm sure it goes on everywhere, is that you'll have this one generation descent from responsible middle class to, you know, drug addled degenerate. You know, the grandparents, the responsible grandparents who, in many cases, you know, they didn't raise their kids right. They, you know, were absentee parents and didn't want to, like bring discipline into the home and all that stuff the way that had been done by their greatest generation parents or whatever. They're raising the kids, the grandkids, like they're their own kids. I've seen that. I don't know how many times.
Well, that happens frequently here, too. I have a lot of friends of mine that live with their grandparents to this day. And a lot of times, the people that I know, it's because their parents are either in jail, dead, or just pieces of garbage.
Yeah, mom's out hoeing for a bowl, you know.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a lot of, like, you know, prostitution in the area that I'm in, but there are a lot of like shithead prescription drug addicts.
Yeah, well, I mean, the way that most white women do this when they become drug addicts, they're not like prostitutes, you know, standing under an underpass somewhere, you know, selling blowjobs for $20 so they can get a fix. What most of them do is they shack up with some you know, guy who, as long as he can provide,
as long as
meth,
he can feed her habit,
yeah, which
but
is,
he's
which,
not willing to put up with her brat, so the brat has to go back to grandma.
Right. Well, it's not just that he's not willing to put up with the brat. It's that everyone agrees that the brat shouldn't be there. I mean, if you've ever seen what the environment around a bunch of people who are doing meth all the time is like, I mean, you'd be glad the children weren't around. But the thing is, that'll only last a few weeks, and then she's, if that long, and then she's on to the next one. And, you know, they'll have whole groups of friends or associates, and we're talking about drug addicts, so they're not friends, but, you know, they'll have this whole group of people in their circle that they run around buying and selling and using drugs with. And, you know, they'll drop their panties in an instant if they need a bump and some dude they know's got one, you know, so... It's not the type of thing where they're going to be worried about whether the kids
eating, getting a shower,
cereal.
Yeah, none of that shit. These fucking people, man. And I tell you what, like, just listening to all of this stuff just makes me hate fucking like Jews so bad, because I'm one of the people that like firmly believe that whites as a whole. I mean, these weren't problems until we were integrated and pushed into being around other fucking races. Only then did we learn how to be such just pieces of shit. Like,
everyone made excuses for niggers.
And it's just like, oh,
unacceptable behavior was acceptable, and now white people are going to participate in it too.
And then lazy whites who understand, like, oh, well, niggers can't live up to any standards that are set up for us. So maybe if I just behave like a nigger, I won't have to meet any of the fucking standards that society has put forth for me to live up to.
Well, and it's not just that; it's also that. You know, even before behaving like a nigger, literally, like, you know, with all these wiggers and everybody listening to rap and all that was a thing. Even back when white people still didn't like niggers, you had several decades, starting with the 60s, of all this propaganda throughout the entire media, where on the one hand, they were promoting, you know, abuse of alcohol and the use of drugs and stuff like that. It was the coolest thing. You know, if you were from my generation and you watched MTV and
Jim Morrison, man.
Yeah, and mainstream movies and all that. And I'm not talking about just like promoting weed. I'm talking about all of it. And on the other hand, you had the media and the school systems promoting open free sex, you know, like, I remember, and I went to an extremely conservative rural high school, and we had sex education there, and it was such a conservative high school. They couldn't even call it that. They called it human relations. And, I'll never forget the whole course. First, they'd teach you how to do everything. You know, they teach you how to kiss, how to do foreplay, how to have sex and all that good stuff. Then they would encourage you to do it as often as possible, but for God's sake, don't get pregnant. And they, you know, that was the whole thing, is just go fuck anybody you want, anybody who will lay still long enough, whatever. But don't have a baby. Don't get pregnant. That will ruin your life. And if you do happen to have a baby, there are ways to stop that. And so, like, immediately, this Generation X that I'm in, even as low as the birth rate with boomers had gone, the birth rate went way down. And that's when you started having the incel phenomenon, even though it wasn't called that. Then you started having all these guys who were having a hard time getting sex because, you know, all these whores are running around on a cock carousel wanting to fuck the same guys. And it's only gotten worse generation after generation.
Well, and these things are only going to continue to get worse so long as we have fucking Jews in this country.
I agree.
I mean, well, they're the ones that are pushing all this whole, like, all of these, like, the sexual degeneracy, like, all of this shit came from them.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, like, all of this stuff.
This is the most recent strike,
Mike. I listened to a little bit of it today, up to the when they were talking about, you know, comparing and contrasting Emma Goldman and Ayn Rand. Or is fucking strike. What the hell does strike?
Rond.
Rond. Mr. pronounces everything wrong.
Fucking Stryker, get your shit together.
Yeah, as I like to say, or as I call it, Israel. Israel is up to... is up to
That's how John Hagee says it. He'll say, you know, we've got to support Israel.
nuance, or the there's no nuance to the
the emphasis on the wrong syllable.
Yeah, you need to look at. There needs to be some nuance to the Israel question. We gotta look
into
the
epitome of hyperbole.
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm standing right here inside the wall of the West Bank where they keep lobbing bottle rockets in on Israel.
bottle rockets in on us. So we're just gonna shoot Palestinians with rubber bullets for the lulz, right? Like,
or you can give it the Halberstram, Israel.
Yeah, dude. So. But I don't know. Do you guys want to take like a quick 5-minute break? I have to rock a piss so bad. We're like 50 minutes
in.
Do
it.
All
right.
I don't know if you guys have
I'm gonna go get a
busy
beer.
Like lives to attend to. I have Fuck. Zero oh. life. So.
Oh, I thought you were going to ask us if we had bladder control.
No, well, I that's the thing. This the bucket that I've been pissing into this entire time is full beside me. So
yeah,
I have to go empty. I've been just pissing into this bucket for the last 4 days.
That's what you saved the milk jugs for.
Yeah,
you save the milk jug and you do the show next to an open window, and when you fill one, you throw it out the window.
Well, I just like to like I have like a big huge window in front of the desk that I'm in right now. And I like to just to fill my window with yellow bottles to look outside and pretend that it's yellow outside. So I need lots of urine for that. And yeah. But yeah, sorry about the urine talk, everybody. I know it's gross. I don't want to,
It doesn't bother me.
Don't want to be like the Daily Show talking about cocks and urine all the time.
Yeah. once you get about 50 years old, urine and urinating becomes a more and more important topic.
But we shall be back in about 5 minutes.
All right.
We'll talk to you all niggas right. then.
Yeah, I'll go grab something to drink.
I'll begin with the sex murder in Danbury, Connecticut of 13-year-old Christina Long. Christina, a bright, pretty sixth grader, was lured to a shopping mall by 25-year-old Saul Dos Reis, a mestizo illegal alien from Brazil. Dos Reis had sex with the blonde, blue-eyed little gringa in his car, then killed her and threw her corpse into a nearby creek. Well, you may think that sort of thing happens all the time these days, but it's just a local police matter. The murder of 13-year-old Christina Long didn't just happen. It was the product of a process that has been developing for decades. This individual murder by itself may have been unpredictable, but the process leading to the murder was deliberate, and the process has targeted every young white Gentile girl in America. Christina was a sixth grade cheerleader at a private Catholic school. A good student and described as sweet by those close to her, Christina had many of the interests common to other girls her age: fashion, dancing, popular music. Her friends did note, however, that recently Christina had begun using cosmetics heavily and dressing provocatively. To understand why, one only needs to look at what she wrote about herself in her internet postings. She wrote in black jive talk she had picked up from watching MTV. The music she listened to was rap. Christina's favorite group was the black female trio called Destiny's Child, which performed songs with titles like Stimulate Me and Bootylicious. Here are just a couple of sentences from her private website, and I quote, "I love to shop, but then again, what girl doesn't? I like hot cars, too. I'm not ho, I just dance a little sexier than most girls." End of quote. For the uninitiated, "I'm not ho" is black talk for "I'm not a whore." But Christina dressed and talked like a whore. When she went to the shopping mall, she went with the intention of having sex with a 25-year-old illegal alien she had met on the internet. What led a white sixth grader to behave like that? I'll tell you And I'll also tell you that many other young white girls are behaving like Christina. And a lot of them are even younger than 13. Do you remember JonBenet Ramsey, the 6-year-old girl who was murdered in December 1996? Like Christina, she was a cute, blue-eyed blonde. Like Christina, she used cosmetics heavily, wore sexy clothes, and danced provocatively at the age of 6.
Who could have killed this beautiful little girl? We've been asking that question for 12 years, and we continue to ask it in this half hour.
All of the media attention focused on the murder mystery aspects of the case. Who had killed little JonBenet? Nobody asked why a 6-year-old white girl from a well-to-do family was dressing and behaving like a 20-year-old strip club dancer. Why are young white girls dressing and trying to behave like adult women? Why are they trying to be sexy at such an early age? The basic answer is that young girls are very fashion conscious, and the fashion being pushed by the media is early teen and preteen sexuality. And I hardly need to tell you that people pushing this sexualizing of children are Jews, and that they are doing it deliberately and consciously. It's not a trend that just happened to develop by itself. The dominant media influence on young teens comes from MTV, which is owned by the Jew Sumner Redstone. Says MTV's chairman of the board, Bob Pittman, and I quote, "At MTV, we don't just shoot for the 14-year-olds, we own them." The man who decides on the content of the entertainment presented to 14-year-olds is MTV's president of programming, Brian Graydon, a homosexual Jew. Nickelodeon, a cable channel also owned by Sumner Redstone, shoots for the younger teens and preteens and is pushing the same trend as MTV. Bruce Friend, the vice president of planning for Nickelodeon, says, and I quote, "In the last 10 years, we've seen a rapid development of upper-age children. The 12 to 14-year-olds of yesterday are the 10 to 12s of today. The rise of the preteen teen is the biggest trend we've seen." Redstone's child poisoners take frequent polls to see what effect their poison is having. The Nickelodeon Yankelevich Youth Monitor found in its polls that by the time they are 12, children describe themselves as, quote, "flirtatious, sexy, trendy, athletic, cool." And Nickelodeon's Bruce Friend reports that by age 11, children in focus groups say they no longer think of themselves as children. The other side of the coin is the children's fashion industry itself, which, as you may have guessed, is as heavily Jewish as the entertainment media. From the clothing chains Gap Kids and Old Navy, which are run by Donald Fisher and Millard Drexler, to the Wet Seal stores run by Irving Teitelbaum and Limited 2, which is run by Michael Raiden, the Jewish influence on children's clothing is pervasive and pernicious. You may have heard of the recent protest by outraged parents over the children's division of Abercrombie and Fitch introducing thong-style underwear for 7 to 14-year-old girls. Until 1988, Abercrombie & Fitch was well known as a traditional American supplier of quality outdoor attire. Then it was acquired by the clothing chain The Limited, where, under the guidance of Leslie Wexner, a fervently Zionist Jew, it was transformed into a purveyor of provocative attire for young people. Limited, too, was another of Wexner's creations that followed a similar course. The sexual exploitation of white children by Jewish fashion designers and executives can be traced back at least as far as the early 1980s, when the bisexual Jew Calvin Klein hired Brooke Shields to model his line of jeans and later devised an ad campaign using children in seductive poses. Today's children are being morally and culturally abused by a fashion industry that receives its inspiration from a degenerate entertainment industry. What could be more obvious proof of a deliberate attempt to corrupt our youth? If the FBI really wanted to accomplish something useful for America, instead of collaborating with the ADL's program to abolish our Bill of Rights, it would investigate and terminate the constant flow of propaganda spewed out by the Jewish media and fashion industries, which is subverting our youth. Instead, it is up to us to neutralize this assault on our children. If you are the parent, grandparent, uncle, or aunt of young white children, you have a sacred obligation to help them develop a lifelong resistance to these Jewish attempts to destroy their racial and cultural identity. Don't wait until a policeman comes to your home bearing tragic news. Remember what happened to Christina Long.
Back from break. I am Larry Ridgway. Still hasn't changed. This nigga didn't change his name. And I'm still joined by Yayo de Luide and Asmodor. And
yeah.
I'm pretty friends. Sure that Asmodor has a story about niggas.
Yeah, I have a story. Believe it or not, I have one. Today I had to venture out into the wide, wonderful, multicultural world, as I'm wont to do when forced to do. I had an elderly relative that I had to take and have cataract surgery. And so that they wanted her to be there at 6 o'clock in the morning. And so we get up and I pick her up at about 5:30, and we drive into town and we show up at the place, and there are like three other elderly women waiting, and it was cold outside. The wind was blowing really hard, and it was 6 o'clock and the doors were locked. And I'm sitting there thinking, this has a whiff of nigger to it. And sure enough, we waited for about 10 or 15 more minutes, and this giant obese nigger bitch comes and unlocks the door. And she, not that she was late to work, she came from inside. She had been inside, but she just got around to letting these old white bitches in when she got around to letting these old white bitches in. And so we go in and we check in, and they send us to the first waiting area. Cause you know, you go in, you sign your name and affirm that you're who you are and all that. And then the next thing, the next process is going to be that you go and sit in the first waiting room so that you can be interviewed by nigger bitch number two about your, you know, all the details. Do you have a ride? Do you, this is your insurance, blah, blah. And so we're sitting there waiting, and all of a sudden I hear something that sounds like the maid in Tom and Jerry when she sees a mouse, right? It's like, oh my God, whoa! And suddenly she comes, and it's the woman that we're going to have to do the check-in interview with. And she's like this 350-pound obese old negress with her hair turning gray and stuff. And she is having a giant conniption because there is a roach, and she is scared to death of roach of bugs. And she is chasing this bug out, but she won't step on it or go near it. The bitch has a bottle of Raid. A can of Raid. And she's standing back like 5 or 10 feet from this thing and just spraying the hell out of this Raid in this tiny little waiting room that all these sick old people are sitting around in.
With your inconsiderate ass, nigga. Yeah.
And I tried to tell her, look, you don't have to keep spraying that bug. And the other white, we were like, it's on its back. I think you got it. She's like, I'm going to be for sure now. She kept spraying the thing.
I won't be for sure.
Fucking choking like the fucking cyclone went up.
Yeah. But I mean, and like immediately everybody in the room, you know, when there's that amount of raid in the air, you know, your sinuses stop up, you got a headache and all this stuff. And she didn't bother to pick up the roach or anything. And I'm just sitting there thinking, man, I've, in this place run by these niggers, a relative of mine is about to get surgery here. There are roaches and now there's raid all over the place.
Yeah, and this time this nigger was probably like, "Oh, don't worry, don't you worry about it, Asmodor, you cracking motherfucker. This stuff only hurts bugs, you know."
Well, when I said something to her about it, she said, "Well, these bug roaches nasty. I got to do something." So we went in and sat down, and she was like, "Well, I'm sorry, but I'm scared to death of these bugs." And
it's like pretend, nigger, that you don't live with roaches to this day in your house. Like.
Yeah, but I mean, and it's so emblematic of the problem you have every time you do anything that you don't have any choice whether you're going to do it or not. You know, if it's an interaction with a government agency. Or an interaction with a large medical agency that gets government money, so they have to have affirmative action. Every person in the office, anywhere you go, at least 95% of them, but like today it was every person. I mean, I'm not shitting you. There was like 2 tons of obese shibun running the office of this place. There was like a half a dozen of them. They were all these big old bitches, you know, this artificial middle class that the government creates. And they can't do anything. Like this woman, no telling how long she's been doing this, and she does it all day long. But her only job is to sit there and click windows on her screen to have the person who is about to get the procedure to sign all the waivers, you know, on the little electronic signature thing. Mm-hmm. And she couldn't figure this shit out, and mm-hmm. Is having trouble after trouble with it. And so every step that I went through that day, other than when I finally met the eye surgeon, who I'm convinced was a kike, was dealing with one of these big fat nigger women. And it was all so slow, and it was all so inefficient, and it was all so rude. And I just, the rest of the day, all I could think of to myself is, you know, this is what is required to point to any type of success or middle class anywhere you go in society, is that any place that the government can force them to hire blacks, they put them in what are the least essential positions. And in the medical field, these least essential positions are all of the office staff. And so, I mean, like this medical system where I go to the doctor, it's the same way. And like, I'll call up there sometimes to see about, you know, getting an appointment or something like that. And they've got some old black woman who answers, and it's like she's speaking Gullah or something. And you know, when they answer the phone, they're going to be telling you, Dr. So-and-so's office, can I help you, or something like that. And all I hear is, what? Yeah. And you know, you ask them some questions, and it's still like speaking to a foreign person. Like, okay, so you're telling me we can't do it this way. Why is it we can't do it this way? And like, well, because that don't be how your insurance works. It's like, do I really trust this 70 IQ Geechee country negress who works at a doctor's office and doesn't know better than to weigh 400 pounds to know how my insurance works? And that's what you have to deal with. You can never talk to a nurse. You can never talk to the doctor. You always have to deal with some affirmative action, big old black woman. But that's my story for today. I mean, I left the house and I went into town for a couple of hours, and this was what I encountered.
You can't just have a couple hours outside without some goddamn nigger just ruining the day, dude. One fucking day without niggers, dude. Like, well, that don't be how your insurance works. It's like, can you even fucking spell insurance, bitch? Like,
yeah, it's like it's spelled INSURANTZ, your insurance.
Yeah, can you tell me? Can you tell me why it doesn't work with my insurance? Like, why? Like, tell me why.
Well
here'd be the reason why.
Well, you got to understand, the insurance It'd be, and I've actually had these conversations with it. The insurance be real complicated, and the average person like yourself can't understand it. But they be these rules and regulations.
Yeah, because you're above average in any fucking sense. In any sense of the word, nigger. Like, well, above average.
Yeah, and like when I was doing the Coffee City thing, we had this really, really dumb, uneducated nigger for the mayor, and that was always really fun to troll him. But we would constantly point out how he was breaking the law. And I think I have this on one of the old YouTube channels still, and I go look at it every now and then for a laugh, because you know, all you have to do to know the law, the state laws and such that were governing what city officials could do, would be to go to the Texas legislature's website and go to that section. It would tell you the law. Well, one day, you know, and this guy, he would, the way we always put it was, every time something posted to our website, he would tell the city secretary to read it to him. One day he was just really upset with something we had written, and he stood up at the council meeting and said, "Look, all these concerned citizens writing on that website, whatever, you think you some kind of lawyer. You ain't no lawyer. You can't just go and read some section of some code in some law and think you know the law." And I'm like, "Well, maybe you can't."
Yeah, just because you can't do it, nigger, doesn't mean that other people can't. Like, there's a lot of things that people can do that require brain power that you can't do, my friend.
Yeah, I read this law that said you're not allowed to spend this money on that. Tell me what part I don't understand. Well, you ain't no lawyer.
Yeah. Okay.
Is you a lawyer?
No, I am not, nigger. Like, that reminds me.
Stop waiting. I can read.
That reminds
you. You people don't know what it's like to be a mayor up in here. These goddamn concerned citizens, they make it rain paper up in this bitch because they think they know the law.
You know, I don't know why, but that just reminded me of this fucking scene from, the 6 Million Years a Slave movie, where that nigger's talking about like moving something down the river or something, or like trying to do something like that. And the white guy goes, "Are you an engineer or are you a nigger?"
And then, you can ask them that about anything.
And then he goes, the nigger's like, and the other white guy there's like, "I don't know." And then he says, "Are you an engineer or are you a nigger?"
You can't be both.
No, dude, absolutely not. You're an affirmative actioner. Like black astronauts, like, get the fuck out of here. Yeah. You actually you can do that for anything. Any employed nigger.
You could ask any rapper, "Are you a poet or are you a nigger?"
Yeah, "Are you a McDonald's worker or are you a nigger?"
Well, the rapper will be honest.
Yeah.
Oh, no, they're like... "Yeah, I'm a nigger. Got my finger on the trigger. Ooga booga. My dick is bigger. Yeah." Yeah.
Larry's got his hottest new track up.
Yeah, I was about... Yeah, I don't know. I was gonna ask you guys while we were on the break, whenever us three were going to cut a, be the white NWA and cut a new hot rap track.
Oh, I don't know if I can do that or not. I mean, I don't know if I'm physically able.
Have you heard my platinum selling records, Asmodor?
I have heard a couple of your tracks, and I have to say they are above average.
Yes,
they're very good.
Well, you know,
Chicken is the hottest track.
Somebody has to take up the slack where. Mr. Bond left off. He seems to have fallen off the radar.
Well, I don't know, man. I had to channel my inner Langston Hughes to get this motherfucker afloat and keep my ass up out the pen. But
do we want to bang out this nigger story before we check out?
Yeah. There's a one nigger story, and then two we can just laugh at for, like, super, super quick. Because J.O. has a life. But yeah, there's they would these people in the well, there are people, and you can imagine who these people are. That want to make they want to have like the International Nigger Museum on the recently excavated Gadsden Wharf in Charleston, South Carolina, because Charleston, South Carolina is pretty much the antebellum South still. Because unlike Virginia, according to, I believe this is the New York Times, this is written by Michael Kimmelman. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Charleston needs that African American museum, period. And now, period. Yeah, they need that. We need an International Nigger Museum because the contributions in niggers is just...
Thing about these nigger museums, and same with the Holocaust museums, they would not exist. So they have two forms of funding, right? One is there's government appropriated funding, and the other is from like ticket sales from visitors. But the only people who visit it are forced to, right? It's school field trips, and increasingly it is corporate diversity day or whatever. I was talking to somebody recently. He's a lawyer with he's with a large organization, and it was like a mandatory field trip for them to go to the Holocaust Museum.
Yeah. Well, and also, you know, you have newly occurring phenomenon of people who are sentenced to go as like part of their sentencing for being mean to Jews or something.
Oh, and that shit's happening overseas like a motherfucker. One of our guys just got rung up. The cops showed up at his place.
Yeah.
And this was in Europe. The cops showed up, and because of his insensitive tweets about Jews, and told him he has to visit a Holocaust museum.
Yeah, well, what he should do is when he goes, he should be prepared with, like, you know, a sheet of paper or whatever that already has this written on it, and find the first ashtray he can find and stick a piece of paper above it that says "Memorial to 6 million burned Jews" with an arrow pointing down at it. they had this great thing that happened a year or two ago down in Argentina, where this school full of German-descended kids went over to the school for Jewish kids and just beat the shit out of a bunch of Jewish kids, and they were saying Nazi stuff to them and everything. And the school, as part of their punishment, forced them to go to a Holocaust museum.
And I'm sure they threw up salutes and shit. Like, these kids aren't cucking.
Yeah. It's like, my great-grandfather was gassing these guys.
Right. Well, I don't know. That's debatable. The Holocaust, I think, is the best thing that never happened at these fucking
people. Right. I agree. Yeah. I mean, I obviously I don't believe it actually happened. But
this is just an attempt to insert nigger sympathy into places where they don't think there's enough of it. But what I'd like to know is, who is at the front of this? Right. Well, who's writing about it? Who's publicizing it? Well, I assure you it's not niggers.
The person who wrote this article is named Michael Kimmelman.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's a Jew.
Right. But it's not just about sympathy. That is a huge part of it. But it's also about non-white supremacy. It's, you know, they're going to go and they're going to take somebody who is a hero. Because when we were off air, we were discussing, I asked Larry if this... Christopher Gadsden was the guy who the Gadsden flag, you know, the No Step on Sneck flag was named after. And it turned out that, yes, he is. So this is like a really big Revolutionary War hero. And this is a war for whatever it is that's named after him and has a park and everything. And they're going to basically pave over that with a nigger museum. And so, you know, it's like when they take down a statue of one of our presidents and put up a statue of some pregnant black woman. It's a sign of supremacy. It really is, of cultural supremacy.
Yeah, shit tests too. Also, I mean, it's also a shit test. Like, how much are you going to put up with Whitey?
Yeah,
but there's a.
I don't think they've thought the shit test part through very well, though.
Nobody likes this shit, right? Like that. That's kind of the broader point I was trying to make about where it's all like forced field trips and corporate shit. Nobody gives a fuck about your nigger museum. It's all a big political act, and even once it's been there for 10 fucking years, nobody gives a fuck. There aren't even enough people who are interested in virtue signaling to keep your doors open. And there are plenty of people interested in virtue signaling, but it's not going to be enough to pay a staff to operate these places.
Well, no, it's definitely not, but that's the thing you guys were just talking about. What they're going to do to keep the doors open on this place is use it as a fucking, as a basically a prison. They're going to use it as a means of punishment. They're going to make nasty neo-Nazis and fucking racists and every other thing that's pathologized.
And they're going to have these fucking schools that are like 30-30-30-10, white, black, Mexican, Asian, go down there. And they're going to lean on the fucking white kids.
Yeah, well, and I just want to read a couple paragraphs from this article. There's one that stuck out to me in the entire thing. And it's that, unlike Virginia, South Carolina hasn't taken down Confederate monuments. Much has changed here, but much has not. The state's most recent proposal for social studies standards in public schools doesn't even mention the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. or Rosa Parks. Like, God forbid that our social studies standards don't require the schools to mention two agitating niggers who weren't satisfied with the way things were in a place that wasn't... I don't know the demographics of South Carolina back in the day, but these uppity niggers trying to change everything, when there was, they were like fucking a small percentage of the people there. And this isn't even their fucking country. And there has been a lot that's changed. And they took the fucking Confederate flag down off the state grounds there at the monument that is in front of it, the Confederate monument that's in front of it, because Dylann Roof shot those 9 niggers in that church. Like, boo-hoo.
Well, they were trying to steal his wallet, weren't they?
Probably.
Yeah, they tried to rob him. He was in there silently praying.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it just so happened these niggas tried to rob him, so he pulled out his in self-defense. And he, you know, free my nigga Dylann, just kidding. But no, seriously, though. But he... and there's some other things here, too. What was this other one? For millions of niggers today... The site is ground zero, as the Harvard scholar Henry Louis Gates Jr. has put it. For blackness, nigger culture, the nigger experience, slavery, however you want to slice it.
Now, Henry Louis Gates, that's the extremely light-skinned, probably octoroon university professor who caused all that shit when Obama got elected because he chimped out on some cops who were doing him the public service of making sure his house wasn't being broken into. and they ended up having the one cop ended up having to go and have a beer with him and Obama or some shit and sit around and talk about how wrong he was and all that because he was breaking into his own house. He'd lost the keys. And he was trying to break into his house late at night, and the cops pulled up, and they were like, "Is this your house?" And you're like, "Hold up there, you racist cracker slave master motherfucker!" You know, like they wouldn't ask me that if they happened to be driving by and I was trying to climb in my window.
That did happen to me when I was 18 years old. My sister and I went outside. We ordered a pizza. And locked ourselves out of the house. So we had to break back into the house. And the cops pulled up on us freaking out.
Yeah.
You know what we did was we stayed calm and we told them, yes, we live here. We described to them the situation. And our neighbors vouched for us. And then we were allowed to break into the house and get our IDs to prove that we lived there.
Yeah.
This is what reasonable people do. This is what white people do.
Right. Not niggers. They're going to be like, hey, yo, motherfucker, you, what you mean coming up here with that badge and shit with a gun on my property? You that you aggressive-ass motherfucker? You challenging me?
They really believe that, like, white cops are driving around all day and they're going, oh, I hope I see some nigger I can beat up. Maybe they'll get lucky I can shoot him. They really think that.
Yeah, they think this stuff because a fucking
Sean King.
Because blacks are just like, blacks are literally are like what niggers are in Boys in the Hood, just driving around in little shitty cars with guns looking for other niggers to kill, dude. It's just like,
but and also
so they just think that whites are like that too. Like, hey, yo, white heat coming out with that badge, that they be a gang, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, blacks, a lot of the reason that they think this is because they are so excessively narcissistic. Nearly every single black really thinks it. Well, I think is a strong word for it, but they really believe that the entire world revolves around them, and that every white person is walking around all day thinking about, how am I going to stick it to a nigger today?
I'm going to find a nigger.
I'm
going to find. I hope some nigger comes in here and tries to buy a cup of coffee, by God.
Right.
I hope some fucking jigaboo comes in here and asks for free plasticware. Yeah. I'm going to get that son of a bitch thrown in jail so fast.
Yeah, he comes in here for a meeting. I hope some nigger comes in here for a meeting. I'll call the cops on him. Get him arrested.
Yeah.
And then have, dude, fucking black people. So then there's other shit in here, too. So basically, they need this. So what happened is Joseph Riley Jr., he was a mayor for decades. He floated the idea of a nigger international nigger museum here in Charleston, South Carolina. And he was elected as in the 70s because he was a racial bridge builder. Now, white racists called him Lil Black Joe when he appointed a
Well, I hope they had something better than that.
No, that's what they called him, I guess. But I mean, this
sounds like a term of endearment.
Yeah. He appointed a nigger police chief in 1975. And now, listen to this. Now, the sentence that happens directly after the fact that they appointed a nigger police chief, Charleston prospered over the intervening decades.
Because of that. Yeah.
Then listen to this. But then gentrification had its effects.
Oh, no.
Two-thirds black in the early 1980s. The population has become 70% white. I suggested to Riley the other day that Charleston can come across to a visitor as Disneyland for the Confederacy. Still enthralled by its era of slavery with a monument on seemingly every downtown corner commemorating some Confederate soldier, plantation aristocrat, or antebellum judge who opposed Lincoln. So, this is just great stuff. Basically, and I see here it says exhibition designer Ralph Applebaum.
Well, you have to have Jews to do these things for niggers, because as every Jew knows, if you don't have a Jew to guide the Negro population, they're way too stupid to ever understand how wrongly they've been done.
Oh my gosh, dude. Now I'm looking down in here. This other stuff they have.
Oh, yeah, there's like this picture in there. Let me scroll it. Yeah, it says
a rendering
showing the I Am hallway that will present audio prompted by touch with clips of oral history highlights. And it's like this long hall, and they've got different colored stripes on sections of the wall with cardboard cutouts of niggers sitting around.
By the way, oral history, for those who don't know, is a code word for nigger talk for which there is no documentation.
Right, it's bullshit.
Oral history necessarily means no proof or documentation.
It means that we didn't know how to fucking write or have any form of written language, but just take our word for it.
Well, you have to understand that the white cracker made sure that if any slave was found with a book, they would bullwhip him to death.
Yeah, okay. It's like, so you niggers forgot how to read over like two generations?
Yeah.
It's like, no. I mean,
at one time, they were the most sophisticated race to ever exist, but then a mad black scientist invented white people and they stole it all.
Fucking Yakub, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, that motherfucker. Yeah, he made the white devil. Yeah, so yeah. This I am hallway should just be like. So listen, here's my idea, right? So the I am hallway is just gonna be all these niggers and this stuff, right? And it's just gonna say each one of them will just the clips they will say is I am a nigger. Every one of them, just straight down the hall. Every fucking one of these blacks.
Well, like, I'm looking at them, and it's not like they're old niggers from the past. It's like you've got some regular young nigger sitting there, you know, in his jeans and his
You've got Kanye West in the front.
And I can just imagine you go up and touch it, and it's something like, you know, this shit is bad, man. I went into McDonald's the other day, and like, they start serving this white person before me, and I'm like, I was here before this white motherfucker. You know, it's going to be some stuff like that.
Yeah. Like, hey, this race, or, but I don't know, man. They're going to try to, like, push off niggers as, like, you know, like, fucking awesome people. They're gonna have messages that these niggers are going to say that are inspirational. Like, you know, overcome, Ooga Booga. One day you too can sit at a lunch counter and eat some fucking pancakes with white people and shit.
Yeah, with people. Yeah, one day you civilize yourself people. Into a place where no one wants you.
Yeah. Yeah, and you won't even know that you. And the thing is that you too can lack the self-awareness to understand that nobody wants you around. And then if you do realize it, you can just not care.
Right.
Because you're too stupid to care.
But it's okay for you not to want people around.
Well, no, man. Every time we let motherfuckers around, something get be stolen from us. Or we be tricked into doing something that we don't want to do. we ain't want to get on them boats. I know about my great-great-great-great-granddaddy. He ain't want to get on that boat, but he was tricked by evil whitey. Yeah. Sold into slavery, ooga booga, on motherfucking Gadsden Wharf. So we gonna put a motherfucking modern art type building up on that shit, and we gonna have niggas lining the hallways.
Yeah.
Filthy.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is just the, these are the nigger version of the Holocaust museums. That's all this is. And, you know, they're aiming for basically the same goal. And that is to guilt whites and to exercise their power over spaces in our country and to influence young people.
And sadly, I think that they're actually going to have a lot of success with that. So the other things, just real quick before we leave, I know J.O. has to leave, I thought were funny. So there's this article in Jezebel from Ashley Reese, this you know, big-haired nigger. Yucky, 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 right? Like, yuck. And the article is, racist and sexist dress codes make school hell for nigger girls.
So, nigger bitches is the preferred term. It's one word, nigger bitch.
Yeah, these nigger hoes, you know. These future prostitutes. Single. these single mothers. In the making. So, you know, it turns out that school dress code policies which prohibit harmless black cultural signifiers and draw attention and, shame to individual body parts makes school disproportionately difficult for black girls. Imagine what, that.
Like bared asses?
So, dude, this first paragraph, it says, school dress codes that make it impossible for niggers to show that they're niggers make school hard for niggers. Imagine that. Yeah. Like, implying that school is not hard for niggers anyway.
Like, well, it says in here, it quotes something called dress coded, and it says, black girls are 17.8 times more likely to be suspended from D.C. schools than white girls. They still have white girls in DC schools?
Right, what the fuck?
Where are these white girls' parents? Like,
yeah. I mean,
well, there was a bar that me and a bunch of my buddies went to one time, and they had a chalkboard out front with the dress code on it.
Is it the bar?
No hats, no sports gear, no sagged pants. And it was basically, I forget what exactly it said, but it was just a giant list of shit that niggers wear.
Yeah.
Like, hey, that's an interesting dress code you've got there. And the guy, like, sort of rolls his eyes and he's like, yeah, it's basically supposed to keep black people out.
Well, that, and there was, I think in Florida somewhere, there was, it was a restaurant or a bar or something, and they only had a rule of no sagging. Like, you couldn't come in with your underwear hanging out and your pants below your ass cheeks. And some local nigger councilman tried to pass a law against it. It was just raising hell about how bad it was that they shouldn't be allowed to do that.
Yeah, God forbid, dude. We want to keep niggers out of our establishments.
But or I at least just tell them to pull their pants up before they come in.
So I want to ask you, Jay, this doesn't happen to be the establishment of that that fucking non-white singing my goddamn song there, yeah, was it?
No, this is a different place.
To come down there, dude, I'm gonna be singing Drowning Pool in that place, you know, letting the bodies hit the floor. Ooh, ooh, rah, rah, like, yeah, being fucking insane. Just kidding. No, Drowning Pool's for fucking... God. It was great, though. I used to follow J.O. around with a Bluetooth speaker and play Drowning Pool.
He would hide in places and then connect. I'd be laying down to take a nap, and all of a sudden, nothing's wrong with me, too.
Yeah, but then he got wise to it, and he'd find it all over the... Or he'd, like, be in the back room on his fucking computer or something. Or, I don't know. It's whatever. So niggers crying about dress codes and stuff. These suspensions make it hard for black girls to graduate. It's like, you know what else makes it hard for nigger girls to graduate? The fact that they can't read. Yeah.
low IQ.
High testosterone. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, anybody who thinks that these... black girls are being done so harshly in the school system and they don't deserve all these suspensions they get and everything. So just watch that one famous video of the white kid in the hood sitting in his desk trying to study, and the nigger bitches are all standing on top of their desks stomping and singing, and one of them actually steps over onto his desk and gets flipped off the desk for it. But
dudes, my God.
Yeah, I can't imagine having to send a young white child of mine to one of these schools now. It was fairly bad even back in the 80s and all, but god damn.
Listen to this shit, Asmodor. This is insane, dude. So, aside from these dress codes being sexist, racist, and arbitrarily enforced, they're also incredibly unforgiving to weather constraints. A 16-year-old student got a dress code violation for wearing a strapless shirt outside in the sweltering heat. I wonder why, because those straps were very fucking, like how horrible. So this little nigger bitch says, last year when we were in a temporary building, we had a transfer from academic to arts block, so we had to wait for buses. It was really hot that day, and I took off my jean jacket, because since we were outside, inside I was wearing a jacket, since the shirt I had underneath was strapless. I got dress coded, and I was told I couldn't wear that. But I was outside, and it was really hot. What do you expect? Oh, I don't know, nigger. How about you follow the fucking dress code while you're in a school zone? How about that?
Right. Well, what they need to do is make these nigger bitches wear something like either really heavy sweatshirts or hazmat suits or something all the time, so that their brown titties don't pop out every time they have a weave pulling fight.
Or AIDS. do it for AIDS. AIDS prevention.
Yeah.
I don't want to send my white kid to school with a bunch of AIDS carrying chimpanzees.
Yeah.
So
74% of DC public high school dress codes allow disciplinary action that can result in missing classes or entire school days. Well, what the fuck? How do the other 26% enforce anything then?
But it's like, what are you niggers complaining about? Like, you would fail school anyway if you were there.
Yeah, it's not like they want to be there. If the principal got on the microphone, did an announcement one morning at one of these schools that said, black kids don't have to come to school anymore. We'll just mark you present. I mean, they would not come
back.
Thank
God.
They would come in at breakfast and get their free breakfast, and they would come back at lunch and get their free lunch, and that's all. And maybe they would come at PE for basketball, and that would be it.
Hey, yo, nigga, we can play in an indoor court today. You know what I be saying?
Yeah. I mean, can't they at least put on clothes that cover up their titties and coochies and everything long enough to eat the free food the white man is paying for?
Well, guys, so these dress codes examined in part of the report are also culturally insensitive, often in hopes of adhering to more mainstream read. White.
They don't allow lip plates.
No, they don't allow that. 60
or neck rings.
Yeah, grass skirts.
68% of DC public high schools ban hair wraps or headscarves, a staple in many everyday hairstyles for niggers. Like,
well, that's because these niggers will hide guns up in that shit.
Yeah, drugs, dude. They're smuggling it in. No, that's seriously, like, these people, it's like, listen, you guys aren't in fucking Africa. Like, what do you mean? Like, these aren't a staple in nigger, like, in nigger wear. Like, I've seen nigger girls around. I've never seen a nigger with the goddamn hair headscarf. Like, that's just you signaling, trying to pretend like you're African or some shit.
Oh, no, I have. I've seen those Erykah Badu.
No, I'm not saying that they don't exist, dude. They exist. But, like, more niggers more often than not, are like, they're not doing that. They're too poor for that shit, or they have a weave that they don't want to cover up.
Yeah.
I spent money on this.
They need to restrict the weave. But the solution to this is obvious, is you institute school uniforms. But, boy, watch them chimp out then, you know.
You're making us dress white, taking our culture.
Yeah.
God absolutely forbid. There's no such thing as black culture any more than there is baboon culture.
Well, I mean, there might be baboon culture. But, I mean, there is black culture, but it's not anything we would actually consider culture, you know. I mean, like, I guess.
Well, culture is subjective, man. Right.
I've talked to people from South Africa, and they talk about how one of the most disgusting things they ever see is that the niggers over there love fried chicken feet, and that to watch them eat the feet, you know, they have to bare their lips all the way back from their teeth and gnaw on them and all. That's black culture.
Yeah, like, oh, nigga, I eat this chicken. I eat every part of chicken. I love the chicken.
Yeah, and eating Ebola bat, that's black culture.
Ebola bat?
Yeah. Well, that's one of the ways that it was getting spread so bad a couple of years ago, like when we had the thing where the nigger from Africa flew into Dallas with Ebola and shit.
I was a normie conservative at that point, and I was so fucking pissed off. I was like, these fucking niggers, dude, like, they can't keep their Ebola asses in fucking Africa. I was like, why are we letting them come here? Like, what the fuck is going on here?
I was in Cape Town during the Ebola outbreak, dude. I was fucking scared to death that niggers are going to fucking fly in with Ebola and try and get to the first world hospital.
Hey, J.O.
It didn't happen, though.
Yeah, but one of the ways, like, it was in Liberia or somewhere like that.
Yeah.
That it was spreading really fast. And the thing was, and, you know, you had all the World Health Organization and all these international church groups with their medical people and everything over there. And they were telling them, stop eating the fried bats. We will, or the bats, however they cook them. It's considered like their favorite food for a large segment of the society. And they're like, you're getting this Ebola from the bats. We will give you good food. Don't eat the bats. And they wouldn't quit eating the bats.
They're like, no, we want these bats, nigga. Like, yeah. Get out of here.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, that's like good nigger cuisine. You know, they try to claim Southern food like it's theirs, like they somehow invented fried chicken and shit like that. But real nigger cuisine is Kenyan fried bat and mosquito burgers. Have you ever seen the video? It was either mosquitoes or gnats. I think it was mosquitoes, where they make the mosquito burgers.
Dude, that's, I mean, no.
it's just
gross,
disgusting.
Dude,
if you go on YouTube and do a YouTube search for like African mosquito burgers, they sit there and they've got these nets, and it's they're in the jungle, and it's whatever part of the season where the mosquitoes are so thick that it's just like a cloud of them everywhere, and they're swinging these nets around, and they collect big piles of these mosquitoes, and they mash them up into a patty and eat them. They're mosquito burgers.
Dude, I want to go to fucking Africa so bad in like a Jeep and just throw like moldy cheeseburgers at niggers, dude. Just like just throwing food that's not edible. Like, keep dreaming, niggers. Like, making them eat disgusting stuff. Oh. No, but no, it wouldn't be like that. I'd probably get my head cut off or something like that.
How it works.
Yeah, savage black people, dude.
I'm going to have to jump out, guys.
All right. Well, it was great talking to you again.
Well, I guess we'll just end this right now. J.O., you can say a final word. We went 45 minutes here in the second part of the show. Barely touched
final
any of the
word.
Content
I think
that we
you
had.
Know what that word is going to be. Niggers.
I'm still, guys, I'm holding out on us three becoming the white NWA and speaking for a generation of white gangster rappers. You know what I'm saying?
Well.
I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. Jesus Christ.
Stranger things have happened.
But, yeah, Asmodor, do you have anything that you want to say? Anything you want to plug?
Well, we've been bashing on the poor Negroes for so long. I would like to end on a positive note, you know. In the last week or so, we have seen niggers attacking Jews in the streets in New York City.
Yes!
And we have seen...
It'd be hot out here!
We have seen a base nigger in a MAGA hat push a wetback in front of a train. And so I think, you know, say what you like about niggers, but I like the way this is going. That's how England put it, and I agree.
Yeah, just
I like the way these things are going.
We as whites, that's the thing, is I think that we have centuries of just watching these people behave like absolute savages. For the past few decades, they've been behaving like savages towards us. It'd be great if we could almost weaponize the niggers the way the Jews have, as an instrument to, you know, just set them loose in the public and do things like that. Base niggers in MAGA hats. Train spotting with Mexicans. Like,
and attacking attacking the Jews in Brooklyn.
Yeah, we need more Farrakhan type niggas out there.
Yeah.
But
I'm all for that.
No, I actually unironically wish that more niggers were like that. But
yeah. Well, we may be seeing the rise of the woke nigga.
Yeah, well, I saw that tweet, J.O., you mentioned earlier. What was it? The guy was like, Sean King. I don't know. One of you guys said it. How Sean King was like, Harvey Weinstein ain't going to be next because he's white. And some like woke-ass nigger was like, he's a Jew.
Right.
He's not white. Nothing's going to happen to him, Woody Allen, or Roman Polanski because they're Jews.
Yeah.
And that's good. Good. Niggers need to hate Jews. Because Jews...
Well, everybody does.
No, everybody does, man. That's the thing. I think that hating Jews could be the national pastime for all races. It could be the one thing that brings us all together. Anti-Semitism is the tie that binds. So...
Well, you sound like a vitriolic racist.
Yeah.
No, that's... that sounds like some person in this call that was named in a recent article.
Yeah, that's what the ADL called me. Anti-Semite and vitriolic racist. I'm really a nice guy.
Yeah. But, all right, yeah, we're going to hop out of here. Episode 37. All I have to say to you niggas is email me on them internets. HateHouse@tutanota.com, and I'm not on Gab anymore, not on Twitter, not really on anything. But yeah, that's it for this week. We'll talk to you next week. Goodbye.
The house next door to me's been sold to niggers. They claim to be wild Indians from the plains. Oh, but they ain't a shucking me, they're colored people. We'll make cowboys and niggers our new game. Last night when I come home, I was warmly greeted, but not by my sweet wife saying, "Hello, dear." Instead, it was, "Hello, doll. What, Mammy Gemma? Says, how does you like us dark folks living here?" Take two, 'cause this nigger crap's done killed all my red roses, and my violets turned black instead of blue. Last night the NAACP came a-calling. I didn't know what it was all about. Oh, but it didn't take me long to understand them when they said, "Won't you kindly move your white butt out?"